Okay. Did you enjoy worshiping with Christian? And yeah, nice job. Well, Troy did out me as a banjo player, so I figured, well, I will play a little tune for you. I only not on the banjo. I've been in youth work for a long time. You can tell that just by looking. This man has been abused by a lot of junior high kids over the years. You can just tell. But anyway, I thought I would do a little... I do play a banjo. I used to play in a band years ago called Brush Arbor. And we actually, by accident, had a couple of hits. And we got to tour with Johnny Cash. And Johnny Cash used to do a song that was kind of a precursor to rap music today. It was a little thing that he did called A Boy Named Sue. Now, you probably, but this was back in the early 70s, you know. It was, well, my daddy left home when I was three. He didn't leave much for my ma and me except this old guitar and an empty bottle of booze, you know. And he went on, you know, and told the story. Well, we were touring with him, and I thought, you know, I'm going to write a song like that. And because in 1973, when we were actually got to tour with him, that was my 10th year in youth ministry. So I wrote a little song that went like this. Well, I can't believe how it all began. It seems like I've always been a youth man. Goes back to around 1963. I was All-State California Bible quiz champ, always a hit at summer camp. I guess you could say I had ability. Well, it didn't take long before I knew what God was calling me to do. So I got me a youth group and gave it everything I had. Well, the kids loved everything I said. I could do no wrong. I just knocked them dead. I said to myself, hey, this kind of work ain't too bad. Well, I was pretty good, as you might have guessed. My youth group soon became one of the best. Grew from 17 to 92. We'd start our meetings with a song and a skit, and then I'd talk for a little bit, and the kids would clap and cheer when I got through. But that was quite a few years ago. Times are different, as you probably know. Keeping up with kids for me has become quite a chore. Well, my hair's falling out and I'm getting too fat. The kids don't consider me where it's at. I'm beginning to wonder if I can cut it anymore. Oh, Lord, you know, many years ago I said I'd do anything for you. Then sure enough, you called my bluff. You showed me just what to do. Now I hate to complain, but I'm needing a change. Could you find somebody else to use? Because like it or not, I think I got those getting out of youth work blues. Oh, yeah. Anyway. That's so. Where does this go? Over here? Yeah. Well. Okay, and your pick goes right here. I'll put it on the guitar so you won't. I was in Nashville not too long ago. Excuse me. Oh. Okay. We're good. It's off now, right? Thank you, Christian, for the guitar. It's really great to be here. Actually, I've been worrying about this for about a month or two. And you know how it is. Speaking is... I've written a lot, and over the years, something that God has allowed me to do, and I don't get a chance to do this very often. And it's just, it's really great. It's really fun. And I'm excited to be here, to be able to come and share a few things with you about youth ministry. The topic that is probably, I think it's printed in your little notebook there. And I read it and thought, oh, okay, that sounds like a good topic, is the direction of youth ministry and how youth ministers need to respond. And I want to talk about, you know, I have been in youth work for a long time. I've been working with kids since the early 60s, that's almost 50 years, something like that. I've been involved in one way or another with youth ministry. I am now at a church in San Diego. It's College Avenue Baptist Church, and I am the pastor to generations. And I've been there just overseeing family and youth and children's and just working with parents and trying to help the generations kind of come together. And it's been a lot of fun. I get to work with old people. I was speaking to a group of the Agape class at our church recently. These are people like 80 years old and up. And these are old people. And I just had a chance. Kind of an embarrassing thing happened. This little lady comes up to me. She must have been like 85 or maybe older. I don't know. But she comes up to me and she says, "You look just like my third husband." And I said, "Really? Well, how many husbands have you had?" And she says, "Two." I got to tell you, I left feeling really good. I don't know. I haven't been hit on in a long time, you know. I mean, it was kind of a neat experience, but I am loving the job that I have right now. But I still love being involved with youth ministry, and I wrote a book that came out last year called "Reinventing Youth Ministry Again." And I wrote the book because I was speaking. I do a lot of parent seminars. In fact, I do seminars with Jim's organization, Homeward. And by the way, Jim, thank you for your message. But he's got the greatest organization to help parents, homeward.com on the internet. It's got a lot of information there. We do seminars, and I still get a chance. In fact, you're going to Dallas and Romania. I'm going to Houston to do a parent seminar for Houston First Baptist on Sunday. And so they're getting all their parents together, and I'm going to do a Understanding Your Teenager seminar, which I've been doing for a good while, and love doing that. But I was doing one of these seminars, and the youth pastor introduced me as one of the guys who invented youth ministry. And it was kind of embarrassing because I'm not that old. I mean, you know, Jesus was not in my youth group. And that was really one of the first youth groups that I know about, is when Jesus was 12, he goes to the temple, right? And he shows up there, and it says that Jesus met with the elders in the temple. And actually, I think that's probably the best youth group that's ever been. You know, I mean, not just because of the quality of the youth in the youth group, but you had a lot of adults and one kid. Usually it's the other way around. You've got a whole bunch of kids and one poor, overworked, underpaid youth person who's working with them. But I think that's probably where youth ministry was invented. Maybe it goes back. Actually, it was Moses who was the first youth guy, right? Because he wrote that Deuteronomy 6. He gave youth workers the curriculum. Here's what you teach them, and then here's how you teach them. You teach them when they wake up, and then when they lie down, and when you walk along the road. Nail it to the doorpost of your house. Wear it from your garments. Get the Christian T-shirts. Text message. Put it as a screensaver on your whatever it takes. And that it goes back a long way. But anyway, fast forward to the beginning of the 20th century, and I want to talk a little bit. What I'm going to do is in order to give you the direction of youth ministry, I want to give you a little history of youth ministry. And it's probably not the official history of youth ministry. There are textbooks that kind of go through the history of youth ministry. What I'm going to give you is really the one that I experienced, the one that I know about. So it's just the way I've witnessed it over the years, and just from my own knowledge of it. Youth ministry, as we know it today, modern youth ministry, really got started in the last century. It's about 50, 60 years old or so, something like that. It kind of coincides with the invention of youth ministry, or the invention of adolescence in the 20th century. It was 1904 when G. Stanley Hall, who's a very famous psychologist, first wrote about adolescence as a separate stage of life. It was a game-changing discovery. that adolescents are unique. It's a unique stage of life. Young people have specific needs, specific developmental tasks that they need to accomplish, and so forth. It impacted the educational system. Suddenly high schools and junior high schools began to spring up to deal with it. Before then, it was all the one-room schoolhouses, you know. But then came the high schools and the junior high schools and so forth. The church kind of didn't get into that until a little bit later on of ministering, especially to that segment of the population. I think most church historians, in fact, I brought some pictures that I want to show you. And Chris is back there on the PowerPoint. But this is a picture of the youth group that I was a part of. And this picture was taken back in 1957, 58, something like that. That's me with the arrow there. And back in those days, there really was no youth ministry as we know it today. It was done primarily by parents. This was Mrs. Boffman, who was standing there with her junior high Sunday school class. I think one of these days I might write one more book. That's everything I ever knew about youth ministry I learned from Laura Boffman. I mean, she was my junior high Sunday school teacher, and her son was in the junior high group. But it was done primarily by parents and volunteers. Our church, I grew up in a Nazarene church, and I don't know if you're familiar with the Nazarene church, but there were no paid youth workers in Nazarene churches or Baptist churches, for that matter. There just really weren't any back in those days. We had a youth society. It was called the Nazarene Young People Society. In fact, we weren't even called teenagers because, in fact, the word teenager never even shows up in a dictionary until the 1950s. We were the young people of the church. The pastor would say, "It's so good to have the young people down here on the front row." And, I mean, to say teenager was really kind of subversive back in those days. We kind of thought I'm a teenager, you know. But you didn't say it too loud. It was, it kind of went with the culture and all of that. But there were young people societies. Now, our Nazarene Young People Society met on Sunday nights, and it was Mrs. Unruh, who was 65, she was president of the Nazarene Young People Society. It was, you got to be part of it as soon as you reached a certain age. But that's kind of the way youth ministry was done back in those days. Now, most church historians credit parachurch ministries like Youth for Christ and Young Life with inventing or really reinventing what we know as today as the modern youth ministry movement. And this is me again. I can't really see the pictures very well from where I stand, but I am in the see, I have to identify myself because I look nothing like that now, but with the plaid shirt and the flat top hairdo. And when I was in high school, I went to Youth for Christ, and the guy sitting kind of in front of me, which is, he's kind of also got the flat top, he was my Youth for Christ Club director. His name is Sam McCreary, and I just saw him recently. He's still just a great guy and serving the Lord, and he was a great role model for me. You can tell I have his hairdo. And back in those days, we wore it short on the top and long on the sides. I still wear it that way. But this was in Youth for Christ. Now you can move. Back in those days, when I showed up at YFC, and by the way, anybody here familiar with Youth for Christ? It's a parachurch ministry that was very popular. It was huge. It was started really back in the 40s by a guy named Torrey Johnson. Billy Graham was the first full-time employee of Youth for Christ.
Jack Hamilton, Jake Kessler, people like that are legendary as having come up through this wonderful organization which reached out to kids. And we had Bible clubs at high schools, and that's what I was a part of. This is a Youth for Christ rally, this picture, and they were incredible. I mean, I know that it looks a little bit ridiculous, but back in the, it was totally unlike anything that we'd experienced at church or at the NYPS, or because it was exciting. It had all of the music and the stage decorations. I mean, it didn't have smoke machines and all that kind of stuff. But you can move it forward here. This is another one of the rallies, and it's funny. The next slide, I think, is that's me. And well, not in the middle there, but this is our staff. I ended up becoming a staff member at YFC, and actually, can you back? I think the slides kind of got out of order there somehow. So we're gonna go. There were some other pictures. Well, this is just a little slideshow here for you. I hope this is okay. But this goes back to the 60s with YFC. This is a YFC club, and we were playing folk music. This was something entirely new back in those days. It was before then, it was mostly choirs and organs, and we started bringing guitars and so forth. And you can, this is a campus life club back in about 1965. That's Mike Iaconelli. Some of you know Mike or the late Mike Iaconelli. He died a few years ago in an automobile accident, but he and I worked together for many years, first in Youth for Christ, and that's one of our high school clubs. Let's see, this is another club meeting, and this is where we used to use the old hot seat, which is the electric chair, and it was like a little torture device that we would use at campus life clubs, but I won't talk about that too. This is our staff back in those days, and really that's me on the far left. Iaconelli is there in the middle, standing behind the guy with the white coat, but this was our San Diego staff, and there's a poster on there. Did I give you that poster, Chris? It's somewhere back there. Okay, it just won't load. Okay, well, that's all right. But I just gave Chris a poster because Jim mentioned John MacArthur, Troy mentioned the John MacArthur Bible. Well, I had a poster in the slides of a Youth for Christ rally where John MacArthur was our speaker, and he was billed as a former All-American quarterback at his college, because he was not yet a pastor, but he was one of the speakers that we used to use back in the 60s to reach kids, and he was a great youth evangelist back in those days. But we all kind of hung out together and had a lot of fun. But just a few pictures there to kind of set the stage for you. Youth for Christ. I went to YFC Club after school. These rallies were unbelievable. The motto of Youth for Christ was geared to the times, anchored to the rock. Jim Rayburn also was the founder of Young Life, and it was another parachurch ministry that was very popular at that time. And Jim Rayburn was famous for a line that he would always teach his staff, and that is that it's a sin to bore a kid with the gospel. And so Young Life stressed having good times with kids, skits, and the music, the folk music that was popular at that time. And as I mentioned, I was a YFC staff from 1963 to 1968. Iaconelli, my partner, was a YFC staff from 1961 through 68. We both went to work for Youth for Christ right out of high school. That was really about the only option for people who wanted to go into youth ministry. And for me, I kind of got the bug. I was hooked. When I was in high school, I just knew I want to work with kids like Sam McCreary and like some of these others that I had seen doing youth ministry. And I wanted to do that, and I knew that the only option really was to go into a parachurch ministry like YFC. And really, those parachurch ministries provided the templates for the reinvention of youth ministry in the local church the first time. We were something of a transitional, part of a transitional time in Youth for Christ. The old YFC clubs, when I used to go after school, it was considered a Bible club. Sort of like if at a high school you would have maybe a Spanish club or a forensic club or a drama club or whatever. There was YFC and it was like a Bible club. But what we did was we changed the old YFC club model into something called Campus Life. We changed the name. We utilized a combination of creative program ideas, crowd breakers, and skits, along with discussions, a short presentation of the gospel. Campus Life clubs became very successful, as you saw in some of those pictures, drawing thousands of kids, and hundreds of decisions for Christ were made as a result of Campus Life clubs. And they were held usually on high school campuses all around the Southern California area. And it began to spread and it became a national movement, Campus Life, back in the 60s. Well, Mike and I left Youth for Christ in 1968 to finish college. And we were hired then by two local churches in San Diego. I became the very first youth director at San Diego First Church of the Nazarene. And Mike became the first youth director at Lemon Grove First Baptist Church. And that's a Southern Baptist church, by the way. And we had no idea what we were doing. I mean, we had been involved in a large parachurch ministry. And there, things were very different than when we got into a church. In YFC, we were treated like professionals. You saw us there in the coats and ties. We were invited to speak at a lot of events around town. The kids adored us. We were like rock stars. Parents weren't around. You know, we did all these things with kids, the Campus Life clubs. So we did whatever we wanted to do. I mean, we threw pies in kids' faces. We electrocuted them on hot seats, as you can see. We conducted fart lighting tournaments. And we suffocated more than just a few by seeing how many marshmallows we could stuff down their throats. And we presented the gospel message with humor, with quick bullet points. We were entertaining. We were fun. And that's what we did in YFC. I mean, that's how we attracted kids. That's how we communicated the gospel. Church youth ministry, by contrast, was pretty dull and boring. But we were hired by these two churches basically to turn their youth groups into Campus Life clubs. That's what they wanted. They wanted to attract kids like Youth for Christ attracted kids. So we went to work, and we started doing that while we were both still in college. There were no resources at that time for doing this, so what Mike and I decided to do was start a little organization. Actually, we didn't even think it was going to become an organization. What we thought we'd do is since there are no resources, and there weren't any at that time, you know, there were no books on how to do youth ministry back in the 60s that we could find. It's at least not the way we knew how to do youth ministry, which was to attract kids, have a great time with them, and then present the gospel. And so we decided to put out a book full of ideas for youth workers who were in churches. And so what we did was we collected ideas that we had used in Campus Life and adapted them for use in the church. And I brought with me a youth ministry artifact, which is this right here. This is the very first idea book that was ever published on youth ministry. And it's just called Ideas, and I silkscreen. These were report folders that I bought at the San Diego State bookstore. And that's where we were going to college. And Ideas, a program. If any of you would like to look at this, I'd love to show it to you. It's really pretty funny when you It's really old. And I was showing it to Duffy Robbins. Duffy's a colleague of ours. And Duffy looked at it. He goes, "Wayne, this is the holy grail of youth ministry." And it was just kind of funny. But there it is. We published this idea book. We couldn't find a publisher back in those days because we had stuff in it, you know, like the Egg and Armpit Relay. And we couldn't find a Christian publisher who was interested in the Egg and Armpit Relay. You couldn't hook a Bible verse to that, you know. So we ended up just publishing them ourselves and selling them wherever we could. We actually put an ad in Christianity Today magazine and said ideas for youth groups. And we put a little picture of it and had a coupon. And before you knew it, we were selling them like hotcakes. I mean, we were in business. So Youth Specialties was born. This was copyright 1968. So since then, Youth Specialties has grown. I left YS, by the way, Youth Specialties, in 1994 to start a ministry to help parents. And it's called Understanding Your Teenager, which is now part of Homeward. But for 26 years, I worked with as well, both in a local church and also at Youth Specialties, building that organization. And I can't tell you how many times people have asked me at a National Youth Workers Convention, where there were thousands and thousands of youth workers, and several of them that happened around the country. People say, "Wayne, did you ever think that YS would ever turn into this?" And my response has always been, "No, of course not. I mean, we never did. But we did have a mission, and it was threefold. And I want to give you that mission here. Just to give you, and again, this is kind of, if we're going to look at the direction of youth ministry, it's kind of, I think, interesting to think about the trajectory that it's been on for a good while. But when we started Youth Specialties, here are the three things that we wanted. Number one is we wanted resources. We wanted better programs, better facilities, bigger budgets. Our church had no budget for youth ministry. Now, these were very forward-thinking churches that hired us. We weren't hired for much. I mean, I can still remember my salary, which was $200 a month. Mike's was exactly the same over at Lemon Grove First Baptist Church. But that was a big stretch. But we had no other budget to work with at all. And I think a lot of that's because youth ministry is nowhere in the Bible. And of course, the church board would say, "Well, if it ain't in the Bible, it ain't in the budget." You know, so that's kind of the way it goes. But we were tired of getting lesson material that was written by retired pastors who were completely out of touch with kids. We were tired of having to meet in the church basement or in the same room where the ladies' tea was going to be held the next day. And what we did at our church was we had an old storage shed out behind the church. It was a garage that we converted into a youth group meeting room. And we put carpet samples down on the floor, and we put psychedelic posters on the wall. This was the 60s, remember? And so we had black lights in there, and we put little speakers up, and this was, we called it the shack, and so our youth group meetings were called Pack the Shack. And so it was apart from the church, and this was totally new for churches of that era. Of course, today churches build huge multi-million-dollar youth complexes for doing youth ministry. One church that we know of in Southern California, their new youth complex was designed by the same people who designed the Tower of Terror at Disneyland. Actually, that's a good name for a youth ministry building, wasn't it? The Tower of Terror. But it's an amazing youth ministry complex. But we wanted resources. We believe that if you had good resources, you could have good youth ministry. In fact, we wrote here, back then we didn't know about mission statements. So the first page is our policy. Our policy is we are dedicated to servicing the church. We believe that modern programming techniques open the way to new dimensions of youth ministry, and so on. We believe that if you just had good program material, you'd have an effective ministry. That was number one. Number two is we wanted respect. We wanted to be treated like professionals. We knew, both of us did, Mike and I, that we'd been called to youth ministry. We didn't want to do anything else. I went to San Diego State studying to be an architect because that's my dad was a building contractor, and I was pretty good at art, and so I worked for my dad in the building trades, and it was planned. My dad would introduce me when I was just a kid as, "This is Wayne the architect," and that's what I thought I was going to be. And I went to San Diego State with a major in architectural engineering. But I knew that God had called me into youth ministry. So I'd go to the guidance counselor and I'd say, "Okay, I'm thinking about changing my major and I want to be a youth director." That's what we were at our churches. We weren't youth pastors. There was no such thing as a youth pastor really at that time. Seminaries did not do youth ministry like this one does in those days. It was, in fact, we used to tell youth workers, "Don't go to seminary, because if you do, you're going to be programmed out of youth work. They're going to send you to the mission field, or they'll make you a senior pastor, but you're not going to become a youth worker." This was, that's no longer true. But at that time, that was the truth. And I remember going to the guidance counselor, and they looked in their book of possible career options to find youth director or youth worker or youth minister. It was not to be found. I ended up with a degree in graphic design. And the reason was, is back in those days, to be a good youth worker, you needed to know how to make a really good poster. And so that's what I decided to do, because I knew I wanted to be in youth work. But nobody could tell me, or any of us, how to get there. But we wanted respect. We wanted to professionalize youth ministry. We wanted it to become a legitimate career track for people who God was calling to come alongside kids. We wanted to stop people from constantly asking us, "When are you going to get a real job?" Mostly our wives were asking that question. And you got to remember, these were the rebellious 60s. Remember, we started Youth Specialties really as kind of a protest against the establishment. It was kind of a Occupy the Church movement, you know, I mean, that was going on back then. We started a magazine for youth workers called the Wittenberg Door. It was kind of an underground paper type of thing, a protest magazine. We started a convention for youth workers, a national youth workers convention, and everybody said, "Why don't you do it at a camp where it's cheap? We can all just take our sleeping." And I was, no. We're professionals. We hold our conventions in the same place senior pastors do, where business people do. So we got a convention hotel, and we had our National Youth Workers Convention. We started a professional journal. But what I'm saying is, when we started youth ministry, what we wanted is we wanted resources, we wanted respect. By the way, I've got a picture here. I forgot that I have some pictures. And Chris, first of all, there's the idea books, right? There's a bunch of those there somewhere. Can you find them? There's resources. Those are some of the idea books. The next picture, this is a newspaper clipping from 1970. It's me and Yaconelli, and youth leaders urge fun as an approach to a ministry in the church. And that's actually at one of the first youth workers convention. But you can go to the next. This is Mike and I in ties. And back in those days, we really associated wearing ties with being professionals. We didn't want to be thought of as unprofessional. And so now, the fact that we're doing the toothpick lifesaver relay or what there is not very professional, but at least you can see we're wearing ties. The next picture, and you can see we came up with kind of a nice corporate logo to make ourselves look professional. This is a picture at, I think, the second or third National Youth Workers Convention, and we had a booth, one of the few booths at our convention, and we're selling and peddling our idea books there in the early days. But we wanted respect. the next three, we wanted resources, respect, and thirdly, is we wanted relevance. What we wanted was youth workers to be able to attract kids, and the only way to do that was to connect to the world that kids were growing up in, to the real world, the world, and the world was changing fast back in the 1960s. We wanted youth groups to be cool, to be hip, or in the vernacular of that time, to be groovy. I've got pictures of some of the posters we did back in those days. Tune in, turn on, drop in at Pack the Shack or whatever the... I think there's another picture there of... just to show you how groovy I was, is a picture of this. There it is, the banjo. This is a group that we put together back in the 60s, and it's really kind of how I got into bluegrass music, which I'm still really a nut about. But we, back in those days, folk music was really popular. And so we started doing hootenannies on Saturday night, and we changed the whole YFC campus. Now, there's a word you probably didn't expect to hear today, right? Hootenanny. But back in those days, what we were trying to do was be relevant. And church, by contrast, was not very relevant. And so we were trying to bring pop culture into the church so that we could somehow communicate better with kids. That's what we were doing. We borrowed heavily from pop culture and the entertainment industry. Of course, today, now, we have our own entertainment industry in the church. And you can take that slide off. by the way, the gal in the middle is my wife, Marcy. We've been married 45 years, and it'll be 46 in January. And I remember that because Super Bowl 46 is coming up in January, and so that's how I remember how many years we've been married. So, but we were in a little folk group back in the 60s. Well, fast forward 30 years or so, and I think it's safe to say that we got what we wanted. When we started Youth Specialties, we wanted resources, we wanted respect, and we wanted relevance. And as the old saying goes, be careful what you wish for. Just as a little joke, there was this couple, they're 60 years old, husband and wife, and they're given for their, and they're celebrating their anniversary. And so they get a gift, it's a magic lantern, and a genie pops out and says, you each get one wish. And so the wife goes first. She says, you know, we've never been on a cruise. I would like to go on a cruise. Poof. She has in her hand tickets for an around-the-world cruise. Two tickets. And the husband says, you know, well, it's my turn for a wish. He says, well, if I'm going to go on a cruise with my wife, then I wish that I was married to someone 30 years younger than me. Poof. He became 90. I love that joke, but again, it's be careful what you wish for. Here's what we got. We got plenty of resources, but what we did was we turned youth ministry into the toy department of the church. We marginalized our kids. We disconnected them from the adult population of the church. We got respect. But we took parents and we took older adults out of the game completely. Churches now, by and large, hire and recruit professionals to do the job. People who've been trained, people who've been to seminary, people who go to conferences, people who read all the books. I took a guy from our church that I've been trying to get involved in youth ministry to the last National Youth Workers Convention that was in San Diego, and I showed him around the exhibit hall. And his head was spinning, and he kind of went, whoa, I had no idea there was this much to youth ministry. I don't know if I can do this. And I had to kind of talk him off the ledge, you know, that, no, it's not that complicated, really. You know, there's, I know there's a bazillion books on it, but you don't have to read them all. You know, we got the respect, we got relevance, but we produced a generation of teenagers who can't begin to tell you what makes Christianity different from other religions or moral codes. They're a mile wide and about an inch deep. And you've probably read about today's kids and the moralistic therapeutic deism that most even churched kids today believe. And we've stood by and we've watched by some accounts, and Jim mentioned this, as something like half or perhaps more of our kids walk away from the church and in many cases their faith. And of course, there are some who would say, well, then we need to get rid of youth ministry. There's a youth ministry abolitionist movement out there. I believe they're wrong, and I'll tell you why. I've got several reasons why, but I'll give you one. I believe that what God has been doing over the last 40 years or so, as youth ministry has grown and become a pretty large industry, really, we now have, by some accounts, a 250,000 or so professional youth workers who have responded to the call of God on their lives to reach young people for Christ and to make disciples of them. I believe that this large group of people, and you're among them, who are preparing themselves or have already prepared themselves to do effective youth ministry in the church, are much better equipped, much better educated than any of us in that first wave of wonderfully misguided youth workers. I believe that God has assembled right now a massive army of youth ministry professionals and volunteers for just such a time as this, to do something that might never have been possible before. And I believe that it is time to reinvent youth ministry once again. And you know, Jim said it, I'll say it as well. It's not my job to do the reinventing. I, for one, am more than happy to pass the torch on to the next generation, to all of you. I'm looking forward to seeing what the next generation of youth workers will do. But for what it's worth, here's a few things that I've learned. Number one, I believe that it's time for youth ministry, it's time for us to turn youth ministry back over to the church. Professional youth workers need to work themselves out of a job. No longer can we warehouse kids in age-segregated youth ministries and expect them to be ready to take their place alongside the adult population of the church when they grow up, and they will grow up someday. We have to find ways to get our kids more involved in the adult ministries of the church and equip the church to come alongside of our kids, to bring the generations together, to give our kids a voice in the church and a place in the life of the church. I'm now a pastor. And one thing that I learned in seminary about being a pastor is that pastors are by definition shepherds. That's where the term comes from. And if you're a youth pastor, I think the mistake we make is to think that our flock are the teenagers. Well, if we had a real flock, you know, of sheep, and we tried isolating or separating the young sheep from the rest of the herd, you'd cause a stampede. The flock, our flock, is not just the kids, it's the whole church. Our job is to be the one who has been called and given the special responsibility to make sure that our young people are being tended to properly, that they're not being neglected. Youth ministry of the future has to become more intergenerational. David Kinnaman, who Jim mentioned, has a new book out titled You Lost Me. I just read it. And he writes this: flourishing intergenerational relationships should distinguish the church from all other cultural institutions. The concept of dividing people into various segments based on their birth years is a very modern contrivance, emerging in part from the needs of the marketplace over the last 100 years. Rather than being defined by segregated age groups, however practical they may seem, I believe we are called to connect our past, the traditions and the elders of the church, with our future, the next generation. Christians are all members of a living organism called the church. In fact, he makes the interesting point in his book that in the Bible, a generation is really not the way we think of a generation, which is like every 20 years we have a new generation. He writes that a generation in the Bible is considered to be everyone who is alive at any given time in history, from birth to the oldest people alive. In other words, we're all part of the same generation, and that's what the Bible means when it's talking about generations and passing it on down. All part of God's family. And I think that idea really resonates with me, because in our church, that's what we're trying to become right now. We're all alive right now. We're all affected by, pop culture, the whole thing. We're all affected by it, not just one little segment. And as a result, we've got to learn how to do this together. And that's what we're trying to do. So how do youth ministers respond to this? Well, you don't respond by installing some kind of intergenerational youth program. This isn't a youth ministry problem. It's a church problem. We don't make youth groups intergenerational. We have to make the church intergenerational once again. And getting this done is going to be agonizingly slow. I'm learning that right now. Jim and I had lunch last week, and I was just telling him what a difficult, the last, since I've been at this church, just how hard is all of my incredible entrepreneurial talent at getting things done has been completely useless in the church, with over 100 years of bureaucracy to overcome, old ways of doing things. But we're taking small steps and we're getting it done slowly but surely, starting to bring people together, worshiping together, having church picnics together, doing family mission trips together, and so on and so forth. I could tell you more about that, and perhaps we will tomorrow. But that's number one. We've got to bring the generations together. And then number two is, no longer can we ignore the incredible influence of parents and families in the lives of their kids all the way through adolescence and even beyond into their young adulthood. What I've learned after almost 50 years of youth ministry is that the best resource that we have for making disciples of teenagers is their parents. And Jim spoke so well about that earlier today. We pastors, shepherds, have been given the mandate to equip the saints. And I think, again, we've always thought of that as we equip our saints or our the teenagers, right? But you know what? The saints are the church. They're the parents. And I know that many of them are not saints. We need to come alongside of them as well. And I can tell you from experience that parents are hungry for help raising their kids up in the way they should go. And last, number three, and certainly not least, is we can't offer our kids anything more relevant than the gospel of Jesus Christ. Relevance in youth ministry is not about competing with the entertainment industry or the idols of pop culture. The only thing that we have to offer kids at all is the hope that comes through a life-changing encounter with Jesus Christ, who died on the cross for their sins and rose again on the third day. And I have to tell you, I'm not sure how many of our kids are actually getting that. Kenda Dean insightfully writes in one of her latest books that Christian young people today suffer from what she calls ascension deficit disorder. They have a very inadequate and anxiety-producing understanding of Christian hope. They don't understand that their hope is not found in how well they live or what they are able to accomplish, but in how well Jesus lived and what he accomplished for them on the cross. Because he lives, we live. Because he won the victory, we win the victory. Therein lies our hope and the hope of the next generation. And it is, as Peter writes in 1 Peter 1:3, a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. It's time for us to stop dumbing down the gospel, settling for what Michael Horton has famously called Christless Christianity. Let's not leave our kids standing at the threshold of faith without their getting that one thing that makes our faith different from all other faiths. This isn't about pushing kids to make decisions or making them memorize verses or memorize creeds. It's about making sure that everything we do in youth ministry points to Jesus and what he did for us on the cross. This is the centerpiece of our faith, and this should also be the centerpiece of our youth ministries as well. My life verse is in the book of Psalms, and I close with this. Since my youth, O God, you have taught me, and to this day I declare your marvelous deeds. Even when I am old and gray, do not forsake me, my God, until I declare your power to the next generation, your mighty acts to all who are to come. Amen. 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 Thank you.